Hello again, and happy I am to be with you. No agent of the Secret Service with a more wonderful record along the lines of roping than old Captain Bob Hobbs. I'll tell one of his most famous achievements. The southern part of Indiana was flooded with the counterfeit coin of the Hoochin Gang. Secret Agent Hobbs and a brother officer named Killian, at the time of our story, had already roped in with the Hoochin Gang. In their work on that end of the case, Killian had visited a dangerous man named Tom Comer in the neighboring county. He knew that Comer was the maker of the counterfeits, and he knew also, and had passed on to Hobbs, intimate details of the visit, Comer's shack, his wife Laura, and other highly important facts, chronological and otherwise. So, while Killian and Hobbs were en route back to the Cincinnati office with Phillips, a member of the Hoochin Gang, Hobbs dumbfounded his partner by announcing his intention of going on right then to Comer's retreat. He was in charge, so though Killian thought it was sure death, he could not interfere. Hobbs announced that Killian was to report back with the prisoner to Captain Edward Abbott, then in charge of the Cleveland District of the United States Secret Service, while he would go on after Comer and his wife. He remarked, as Killian reported it later, that he'd either return with Comer and the raw-boned masculine wife who was the equal of any desperado for daring or shooting, or they would get him. So next morning, Detective Hobbs, leaving the town behind him and following the road which had been minutely described to him by Killian, skirted the highway, using the woods until he was within 500 or 600 yards of Comer's cabin in the clearing. And then he detoured, up the wind, as the hunters say, to avoid giving Comer's dogs any hint of the presence of a stranger. Next, he climbed a tree, from the foliage of which he could view the cabin and surroundings, and there awaited developments. Presently, a man came leisurely along the highway, shotgun carried easily in the hollow of his arm. He entered the cabin. Hobbs knew instantly from Killian's description that this tall, rugged native with the massive shoulders was Tom Comer, his quarry. Hobbs climbed down from the tree and then did a very strange thing. He put his holster, his handcuffs, and his commission book in his handkerchief and buried it all, marking the spot plainly. And then he worked his way around back through the woods to Frenchtown, had dinner there, loafed a bit, and talked timber with the natives. Late in the afternoon, he started for Comer's place, but this time he stuck boldly to the main road. Reaching the clearing, he turned in, facing the cabin. And then he gave a peculiar call. He had learned it from Killian, who said it was the sign between members of Hoochin's gang and Comer, when the former called to buy more bogus coins. Instantly, Comer appeared in the doorway, shotgun in hand, and Hobbs saw guns in two hip holsters. Comer eyed Hobbs suspiciously, but walked over to him, demanding who he was. Hobbs, cool in the face of sure death, if he slipped in his lines, laughed, telling Comer that he was Jack Hoochin, the same Jack, he said, who was down with his brother Jess the year before. Well, Comer didn't seem any too ready to remember, and he was fingering his gun trigger as though he was tempted. And then he remarked that his visitor seemed to have changed a whole lot. But Hobbs knew he did look much like Jack Hoochin in size, and he did know that Comer had only seen Hoochin once over a year before, so he carried on, laughing easily at Comer's suspicions. "Perhaps it's my mustache," he said. "The folks say it makes me look different. But you must remember me coming here with Jess. It was the day you went to get us some cider, you remember? And you tripped and fell, and pretty near broke your neck." The trick was done. Suspicion died in Comer's eyes. A grim smile lighted his rugged face. His shotgun was lowered carelessly, and then he laughed, remarking now that he did remember that, and together they walked toward the cabin. A huge creature filled the doorway. Comer introduced Hobbs as Jack Hoochin. Hobbs remarked the woman who was his wife Laura had been away when he was up fall before last with Jess. The men spent some time talking. Hobbs graphically described the raid on the Hoochins in Pikeville. He said his old man was shot, but that one of the government devils got it good, too. And he told of his own escape through a rear window, hiding in the woods by day and traveling by night. He assured Comer that no one had talked and that no one could possibly know the source of their counterfeits. Comer was completely fooled and bragged that Hobbs was safe with him. The time came for bed. Hobbs never closed an eye all night, listening intently for hostile moves. Breakfast over, Comer took Hobbs to his workshop room, starting in right there, under the eyes of the government agent, to finish up a batch of counterfeit coin. Mrs. Comer even dropped in once or twice and incidentally kept a sharp lookout both ways on the road. Comer, working at his burnishing wheel, bragged of his wife, Laura. He said she was a match for any man, and Hobbs decided he was right, vaguely wondering what would happen to him if the Amazonic Laura should know his real identity and get her great hands on his throat. Pretty soon, Hobbs made his next move. He said he'd like to get a paper in town and read about the raid in Pikeville on his own home. Comer agreed to leave about 3 o'clock with him for Frenchtown and get one. Shortly after they left together, Hobbs stopped, remarked he had a bottle of whiskey in the woods, said he'd buried it there yesterday as he came up and that he wanted it. No suspicion crossed Comer's mind. Hobbs dropped behind and raced over to the place where he had buried his credentials, his gun and his cuffs, retrieved them and caught up with Comer, and they entered the little post office together. Nobody there but the postmaster behind the counter. Tom Comer asked for his paper and then turned about smiling, but the smile died on his face, for he was looking down the barrel of Hobbs' ugly blue steel revolver. Comer obeyed. His hands went up, though he was snarling. Hobbs ran one hand over Comer for weapons, withdrew his one gun, pocketed it, and tossed his handcuffs on the counter. Comer, still obedient, slipped them on, clicking them still tighter about his own wrists, for he was urged on by the prod from Hobbs' gun. The postmaster, who had ducked behind the counter, was called on for heavy twine. Under Hobbs' direction, he tightly bound the prisoner's feet. Then Hobbs swore in the postmaster and 3 citizens as aides and turned the prisoner over to them to watch and started back for Comer's cabin. Just as he reached the clearing, he broke into a run, began yelling at the top of his voice. By the time he neared the cabin, he was just as he had intended to be, out of breath, red-faced, and appeared all the more excited. The mastodonic creature, Laura, hove into the doorway, shouting to know what was the matter. Hobbs was timing his approach. He was panting, but he managed to urge her to bring the gun, quick. And big Laura, dangerous Laura, mastodonic Laura, failed to think fast, just obeyed him. She came running with a gun. Hobbs put his hands out for it, glancing fearfully up the road. Laura put the gun in his hands, she too looking fearfully up the road, as she demanded, "What is it? Where are they?" Hobbs backed away a yard or two, smiling now openly, for Laura had her back to him and was searching the distance for sign of the cause of Hobbs' excitement. Laura turned around to look down the yawning barrels of her own Tom Comer's heavy-calibered shotgun. Hobbs marched her to the house, kept her covered while he gathered up all the weapons. Then he entered the workshop room, Laura, hands above her, still preceding him. The moles for the coins Hobbs was careful to collect and pocket himself, for they were evidence, and he wouldn't chance Laura's willingness to break and so destroy them. But he did put her to work, collecting the counterfeit coin and counterfeiting material about the place. As instructed, she bagged it. Only once did she hesitate as though about to spring, but the menace of that shotgun, or perhaps the cool glitter in the brave man's eyes, deterred her. When he had all the evidence he needed, he let her bundle up a few personal intimate belongings, and then the strange trek to Frenchtown began. The huge-bodied woman, the equal of any man, before him, 2 canvas bags slung over her broad shoulders, and Hobbs behind, the business end of his shotgun within 10 feet of his second prisoner. In Frenchtown, she too was trussed up and permitted a chair beside the frothy husband behind the post office partitions. Hobbs sent for means of transportation, loaded his 2 prisoners on the seat next to him, the evidence in behind them, appointed a man to guard the Comer cabin, and drove to Ramsey's station. They rode to Huntingdonsburg, but there was no train there for Evansville, Indiana, until morning, so he took a single room in the town's single hotel, sat up all night guarding the sleeping couple, arrived in Indianapolis the next morning, changed for his train to headquarters, and that night turned his prisoners over to Captain Edward Abbott. Old Bob Hobbs, as he was affectionately known to the boys of the Secret Service, had been continuously on duty from 5 Friday morning until nearly 6 on Sunday, over 60 hours. It was a neat piece of work, devoid of scientific crime detection, yes, for raw cases like that in the open country, with the quarry known gun-toters and desperate people, needs little science. The annals of the United States Secret Service are loaded with incidents just like this, of faithful performance of duty against terrific odds, with little chance of success at the outset, but finally triumphant because of the quick wit, the intelligence, the resourcefulness, and the courage of its agents. And friends, if you think that 30 years' experience solving problems hardens a man, please believe me that it has not hardened me. Not by a jugful, it's quite the opposite. It's equipped me to do more than entertain you with stories. It's fitted me to help you with that problem that defies solution, never mind whether it's crime or not. I want to help, and maybe I can. Will you let me try? I'll treat your letter as confidential if you'll write me what's worrying you. The address, Laguna Beach. I'll spell it, L-A-G-U-N-A, Laguna Beach, California, my home by the sea. Will you trust me? I said I'd treat it confidential, and I will. Well, that clock can race around the face of the thing. I'm sorry the time's up. I always am. I wonder what you think. Adios.